today.
Yes.
I want to talk about your year. You're the last 12 months.
2024?
So it's now December 2024, and I want to go back all the way to December 2023.
Okay. What you want to know?
What was this year like?
This one was really different. I mean, it was, and you know, because you've been sort of part of this entire year. I mean, when did we first connect? Like, when did you come into the office for that first sit down?
It would have been September or October of 2023. So right, almost just a little over a year ago, yeah. I reached out to you.
And I remember the one thing that I remember from that conversation too.
Oh, don't tell me.
Well, no, I remember just enjoying the conversation, but I remember you kind of came to me with price lists for what you would be offering for real estate photography. And I was like, those are low, those are low, those are low,
yeah.
Those are low. And I think that was, we just got into, you know, your desire to do things more than sort of the execution of it and determining why you were doing it and all that kind of stuff. And I've always had a fascination with just asking a lot of questions to figure out what motivates somebody.
Oh yeah. When someone sits in your office, like they better be ready. Like it's like a hot seat. Cause you'd be like, well, I just wanted to talk about this. You're like, I don't care about that. I want to talk about this. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa.
I tend to have the direct the conversation in one way or another.
Oh yeah. And you go like to that sub level, but this is all about your year.
Sorry. See, I'm already doing,
you're already, I don't like doing it. Yeah. Controlling the conversation and directing back to me. So would you say, like, I feel like this year you've, like, it's changed a lot from December, 2023 to December, 2024.
Yeah.
And I've definitely got like some notes of things that I know that I'm part of the change.
Right.
But would you say it was 12 months of being uncomfortable?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all of it was intentional, right? It was intentionally getting uncomfortable and evaluating what would align to move us, the team, myself, in the direction that I want to go.
Do you think you're really good at being uncomfortable? And have you always been that way?
I think I've always put myself in positions to be uncomfortable, but I don't know that I ever made the conscious decision, or I don't know that I ever recognized whether I was good at it or bad at it. But I think over time I've gotten more comfortable with it and I've recognized the value in it. And then sort of being uncomfortable doesn't really matter to me anymore.
Something you said to me was that there's a distinction between uncomfortable and hard. And they're not always the same. A lot of times, the easier things, and I see this in you, are the uncomfortable pieces. You're very comfortable at just doing the hard stuff.
Well, I'm very comfortable doing the things that I have done for an extended period of time. So as soon as I understand and I know how to do something, and whether I'm good at it or bad at it or, you know, just sort of in the middle, if I understand what's expected and I know what the possible outcomes are, good or bad, it generally makes it that much easier for me to just do it on autopilot. What's interesting is that I have a harder time. The actions aren't the difficulty for me. It's overcoming where my brain goes. It's like slowing my brain down. If I don't have to make decisions, I make so many decisions. Sandy actually brought it up this might have been a couple of years ago. Actually, it was my sister Emily when she was working for me. She brought up the concept of like decision fatigue. And decision fatigue is one of those things that I battle with because I tend to make better decisions based on my gut and my heart versus my brain. My brain, when it has the opportunity, will sort of overthink my heart and my gut, and it will cause me to make decisions that typically are not the direction that I would go again if I had to choose.
So you talk about making decisions. In December of 2023, you made the decision to switch to EXP. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was that a hard decision? Was it comfortable? Was it uncomfortable? Why did you make that decision?
I think that it was
from Compass, correct?
Yeah. So I was with Compass for 2 years after, I don't know, 14 or 15 years with Remax. So I was at Remax. I tend to, once I find something that works, it would take a lot for me to make a switch again.
Okay. So if, you switched?
Yeah. So I was with Compass for 2 years. So after 14 or 15 years with Remax, literally the same office doing the same thing for 14 or 15 years in a row, I made the decision back in 2021 to leave Remax, went to Compass for a couple of years. And that's probably a whole nother conversation about why, but
it's shocking to me. Like after you with Remax for 15 years, and then you made this big switch to Compass to only stay for 2 years. And then not even a year ago, you switched to EXP. That had to be extremely uncomfortable and kind of unnatural for you to make that much change.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable, but it goes back to the idea that it was easy. Like that wasn't a decision that was hard for me to make to leave Compass. Quite honestly, I think, you know, if you go back and ask my coach Aaron, like when we were evaluating which brokerage switch would make sense back in 2021, you know, I think I still have the notebook around here somewhere. I mean, it was just pages and pages of like pros and cons and, you know, what would be the benefit and how would it look and what would we structure the office like and what the numbers look like and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, Aaron was with Keller Williams and I had looked into and met with the local guys here at Keller Williams, you know, and I had evaluated that, but it was not the right fit for me. So I knew that that was not an option. And EXP to me at the time, I didn't understand the model. I didn't understand what it really, the value it provided. And so almost immediately when I got to Compass, I knew it was the wrong place. Yeah. I mean, Sandy and I had a conversation 6 weeks in about what it would look like if we just punted it and looked for something different. But at the time we were cranking. You know, like I think 2021 was outside of this year, my best year ever. And so we were just so busy and things, and it just, you know, we opened up this office, you know, we were in the process.
At the same time that you would just switch to, okay, so you were just doing all things new.
Yeah, because we had just come out of COVID. So we were out of the office for a certain period of time for COVID. We were working out of our houses, you know, the staff would come over and, you know, my sister at the time who was working for me and Sandy would come over to the house. There was a buyer's agent, Gayton at the time, you know, they would come over to the house every once in a while, but we needed physical space. And one of the reasons that I wanted to get sort of out on my own was to have my own office space. And, you know, at the time when I had made the decision to come to Compass, we were actually in the process of building out another space. And then the location that we have now became available sort of shortly after we joined Compass. So not only were we changing physical location, we were changing brokerage. The team was shifting and adjusting. Wow. A little bit. So there was a lot of change. And so to make the decision and then to put all of the effort, you know, both in rebranding and marketing. Yes. And then, you know, there was still a concern at the time about public perception of, you know, if I went to Compass, because it and I understand that this is sort of a hyper local thing, but because of the volume of business that I do, people pay attention. And I'm not suggesting perhaps the clients out there, like the consumer that helps me buy or sell, I think that they will notice, but they don't really pay attention, but the real estate community does. Mm-hmm. Right. And so for me to go from, you know, Remax to Compass for 6 or 8, 10, 12 weeks, and then, you know, make a move at that point, it probably would have been the correct decision to do at the time, but I didn't have the mental energy to make it happen. So I just said, all right, let's buckle down. We'll do this for a couple of years because my contract with Compass was 2 years long.
Okay.
And fast forward to 2023 at the end of September, early October is when my contract with Compass had expired. And I had some discussions with them about re-signing a contract. But during the course of 2023, mm-hmm. I had sort of been exposed to what EXP has to offer, their model and what it meant, the direction that I could go at the company. And that was just, you know, as soon as I saw it, it was hard to unsee.
So you switched a year ago.
Yep.
And it was an easy decision, but I'm sure it's been like you had to get new systems and I don't know all the inner workings of that, but I'm sure it was a time of being super uncomfortable, another new brokerage and kind of establishing yourself that way.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the arguably we were leaving, and this is what I will say about Compass. Compass has some of the best technology. I mean, I haven't seen the inner workings of some of the other sort of luxury brands that are out there. Mm-hmm. But as far as Compass is concerned, I mean, they had an amazing technology platform. Their contact management software, their AI integrated marketing, and their CMA platform, and like virtually every their buyer search engine, like every single thing technology wise at Compass was all sort of packaged together.
And that was, it was
amazing. It was amazing. And honestly, what it forced us to do by recognizing and getting into that space and seeing what was possible with technology, It forced us to look at what we were providing for our clients. And one of the biggest concerns with leaving Compass was not so much doing business or the perception of doing business or anything like that. But, you know, once you get used to providing a level of service to your clients and that service being so good, it's hard to then turn and go, all right, well, I'm going to provide this C-level quality customer care or experience.
And knowing something better is out there.
And knowing something is better, right? To the point where, like, if Compass ever ended up licensing their software, they could charge me however much they want, I would buy it. Now, we found reasonable replacements for it, you know, stuff
that
like
took time.
90-95%. But we had to start that well before we left Compass, because, you know, what I found when I went from RE/MAX to Compass is that the preparation to sort of switch brokerages, especially if you're doing volume, you know, if you do 6, 8, 10 transactions per year, and perhaps you make a switch and you don't do any business for 2 or 3 months, that's not drastic. But, you know, we're putting, you know, 2, 4, 6, 12 properties on the market every month. And certainly we chose the time of year intentionally, right? Towards Q4. But yeah, I mean, we had to get up and running really quickly.
You mentioned Q4.
Yep.
That was around the time that I introduced myself to you.
Mm-hmm. We knew each other before that.
Well, yes. I guess professionally, I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years and then kind of ventured out into doing real estate photography and reached out to you for that.
Yeah.
Just for advice and also letting you know that I was out there and not staying at home anymore.
That was really smart of you, by the way. I should pat you on the back for coming to see me. No,
But so I had no idea that was going on. And then at the same time, you started doing these masterminds.
Yep.
Which, for anyone that doesn't know, you basically every month open up your office to agents and do kind of a 2-hour, for lack of a better word, mastermind on a topic that's relevant to everyone.
Yeah, it's so to clarify, the mastermind sessions are a combination between sort of a small group mastermind that a lot of agents are used to.
Okay.
And then what people would call like a lunch and learn, where they would show up for a couple hours, learn something, be part of the audience. So it's, you know, my goal has never been to just sit up and preach, but to sort of have it be interactive and have it go in a direction that just naturally feels comfortable.
Was this new to you? Had you ever done these before?
No.
You led them?
No. And so it's interesting because if you look back at, like, if you had told me 2 years ago that I'd be doing like presentations, that I'd be on social media, that I would be so public facing. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the vast majority of my career, like really, if I've been in the business now, like 18, 19 years, for 16 of them, like I operated very much behind the scenes. Like I would go into my office every single day. I'd do my prospecting and cold calling from a closed door. I would go out, I would see the people that I would see, but I had no interaction with the community. I had no sort of public facing personality.
You were a solo machine, like a solo technician.
Yeah, I was a technician and I was very good at it. Right?
And that helped you, because I do know you've said before that you're an introvert. So you would give as much as you could and then you would go back and shut the door.
Correct. And that was a lot easier. Dealing with folks over the phone was a lot easier than dealing with people in person. So there's a lot of folks, there's a lot of agents that will go out to networking events and they'll spend time at, you know, at these social activities.
Yeah.
And for me, that was...
I mean, I've heard you say before that you, like, loathe the term lunch and learn. Yeah, like, and you're literally doing them yourself now.
And I think I think it's
what happened. And is this this can't be easy for you as an introvert. You have to be exhausted after it.
I am. And I learned that lesson the first time where I got done with it and I had a packed afternoon and I spent 2 hours and I was super, like, I was anxious about it. And then I did it. And then all of a sudden I had like 3 appointments that afternoon and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get that. I ended up going on them and, you know, whatever. I don't even remember what they were, but I remember Sandy and I talking the day afterward and we were like, yeah, we like, anytime I do one of those, I can voluntarily work the rest of the day, but I need to be able to just shut it down. I can't like deal with more people. And that's gotten easier over time too. Like the way that I feel after like the event this past week versus the first one, drastically different. And that's also just me being like my body's response to being uncomfortable in situations. I have a tendency to want to pull back and be alone and not sort of interact with anybody.
What made you want to do these masterminds then? What's the
So let me get back to like the my loathing lunch and learns.
Yeah.
So
I've heard you say it.
So I think it was born out of the idea that I understand why there's a,
and that's just like, that's just your personality. There's so much good that comes out of it. It just wasn't for you.
Yes and no. So, at least the experience that I had when I look at lunch and learn. So I was very fortunate to get introduced to coaching and training at a very young age. My mother, for anybody that knows me or knows my story, my mother's been selling real estate in Eastern Connecticut for 30 years. And when she got into the business, I was young and she got involved in coaching and training through the Mike Ferry organization. And so at a very young age, I got introduced to that. So naturally, when I got into real estate, that's what I did. I just automatically got involved in Mike Ferry's training and coaching, and I would go to events and I started doing his coaching and training. And so I was surrounded by people who were like exceptionally good at what they did. They were motivational and inspirational, and they looked like they had it all, right? And they had a very, for an analytical, they had a very precise plan on exactly what to do and how to do it. There was a script. Don't deviate from the script. Don't change a word. Learn the script. Say it to the people and it will work. And it did. Mm-hmm. And so when I would go to these lunch and learns, a lot of the times they were held by mortgage brokers who were looking to earn agents business, or attorneys that were looking to earn agents business. But the value that I received from coaching and training and events through these organizations were just so much drastically better than sitting through a 2-hour lunch and learn, where really there wasn't a ton of value from a top producing real estate agent. And perhaps I was just not putting myself in the correct rooms at the time, but that's why I just didn't feel like there was a whole lot of value. I felt like the people that were hosting it were just hosting it to get agents into the room and not actually there providing what would make sense. And part of that was that as soon as my personality is such that, or historically has been, as soon as I find something that works, I tend to put the blinders on and continue to do that.
And I would say that's you like listening. You've talked a lot about like when you just go with your gut, when you feel that click, it doesn't matter how hard it's going to be or uncomfortable it's going to be, you know it's right. And you go for it.
Doing the activity is the easy part. Doing the work is the easy part. Making the decisions for somebody like me is the harder one. Right. So as soon as the decision's made, let's go.
Okay.
Right. And that was for everything. I've always liked working out. I've enjoyed like harder workouts my entire life. Skiing, I want to go ski the faster one. I want to go ski the steeper one. Right. Like almost in every aspect of life, I'm looking to push the boundary of what is possible, but it's easy for me to go forward once the plan is laid out. It's much harder for me to decide what direction, determine what to do, again, because of that battle between my mind and my gut, and my heart.
And so you're doing these masterminds and you just feel yourself, you know, how once you found yourself being impacted by the right ones, you said, I've got to go do this for my area as well. And my like local reach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it had to do with the opportunity. So what's wonderful about EXP and the brokerage model that I've chosen to go after, and there are plenty of them, copycat brokerage models out there that are 100% virtual that have a rev share component. But what was unique is that, and a lot of people will have heard me say this, but the traditional brokerage model is very difficult these days, because if, you know, 30, 40 years ago, based on my production level, the natural next step would be to open up a real estate brokerage. So it just Esposito Realty Group would sort of open up in Mansfield, and maybe I'd have two or three different locations over time. Agents would come to work for me. I would help them grow and build their businesses. And then in turn, they would share 30 to 50% of their commissions with the brokerage to make it a reciprocal value exchange. So there was value that the agents get, and there's value that the broker gets. What's happened over time is that brokerages have started offering less and less services to attract more and more agents to allow them to earn more of a commission. And so right now you can go out and you can get you can pay less than, I think there's some brokerage models out there that'll let you play $8,000 or $10,000, and then you make 100% of what you bring in. Mm-hmm. And so in that situation, that's great for the agent, but for the brokerage, the only way that you can make that work is if you scale. And once you scale, you've got to be able to provide value at scale. And that's really hard to do. And it takes away from the value exchange. So if the agents aren't giving a hell of a lot of value to the brokerage, why is the brokerage giving a hell of a lot of value to the agent? And so the brokerage starts providing less and less, because they've got overhead, they've got to recruit, they've got to manage, they've got physical office locations, they've got,
right,
you know, something's errors and emissions, all of that kind of stuff. So the value exchange has just gone screwy. And
do you feel, so you feel like, yes, the agent in typical models now, yes, the agent is making potentially 100% of their share or the transaction, but then they're kind of out on their own
I think it depends on the model and what you're doing. And the long story short is that the brokerage model here at AXP is a test in distributed leadership. So basically they recognize the opportunity to incentivize top agents and or any agent to attract agents to the company, which solves the issue of recruiting and management, and then incentivize them to pour into agents. And they would share a percentage of the revenue that's generated from that agent to incentivize that agent to continue to pour out into other people. In other brokerage models, there would be no incentive for me to, outside of just my own goodwill, there'd be no incentive for me to do these events and help other agents succeed at a high level. Again, outside of just goodwill. And eventually, based on what a successful agent can make, the time spent doing that isn't worth not working.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so for me, being that I have been in the business now, you know, personally selling real estate 18, 19 years, but, you know, again, my mother's been in the real estate business for 30 years. I've been virtually like surrounded by real estate for 30 years. I've gotten very, very good at what I do as far as helping folks buy and sell real estate. And I do still want to continue to do that. But at the same time, I feel this sense of responsibility or obligation, and not in a negative way, but almost in a, I've been so fortunate to have been put in positions that have allowed me to succeed, been put in environments and next to people, and been surrounded by amazing human beings that have taken time out of what they're doing, where they could have made a lot more money by not helping me. Mm-hmm. And they've poured out and helped me to become the person that I am right now. And sitting around looking at, do I want to sell 20 more homes and make a certain amount more money, or do I want to have an impact on people? And, you know, again, I've been very fortunate with the success that I've had over the years that financially I don't need, nor do I really make it a priority or a goal to make more money at this point in my career. I think that what brings me a lot more joy and satisfaction is just having an impact on other people. And if I can do that while maintaining the lifestyle that I have now financially, that would be the goal, right?
And that leads us to, you now have a team. And we mentioned earlier, you know, you were a solo, like...
Technician. There it is.
Transaction-based. Mm-hmm. And now I see you as more of this relationship-based, kind of like you're running a six-person team.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? And when did... Two questions.
Yep.
How are you feeling? How long has it been? It's been about a month of really the six-person team?
Yeah, because you and Pedro basically came on at the same time.
Okay. And then Ashley was right before. So it's been kind of Ashley's building.
Been a couple of months, but yeah.
It's been building over the past couple months, which was also at the same time you went on a two-week vacation in the summer. That kind of seems like that's when you came back from 2 weeks away, the team formed.
Yeah, it was shortly after that. And I think it was always intentionally to grow the team. But my issue historically has been that I haven't presented a big enough opportunity that attracts the people that I want. And so, you know, as it was, like, we started talking about assistance back in the day, and or we were talking earlier today about, mm-hmm. you know, sort of the first time I hired an assistant, you said, you know, how did that work out? And it wasn't great, right?
And it had to be really hard. Like, I'm the kind of person where I will not ask for help. I will run myself into the ground and get till I get it right. Mm-hmm. But for me to bring someone on and give up that control and also have to teach them the things and then get it wrong, that's just like, oh my gosh, that's so overwhelming to me. Definitely uncomfortable.
I'm yeah, way you're more... like squirming in your chair. You see a physical reaction. You're like, I can't sit in this chair comfortably imagine. While I'm talking about being uncomfortable.
I could never imagine. I can't imagine it, actually. But it would be very uncomfortable for me, even though in the end it would be easier, but to give up that control, to hire someone, to hire an assistant, to go through the process.
So what's interesting and
you did
well, and while you're working here, we're going to work on that so that you don't have such an issue with it. But
I feel like you and I are built very much the same.
Yeah, I'm only a couple of steps ahead of you.
Yeah.
Right? Like with regards to the development to be able to trust other people and let stuff go. And that was when I was a technician. That's why I didn't want to a solo agent. That's why I didn't want to hire a team. I was much more effective. And this goes back to sort of my first job out of college and being a good salesperson. And then they put you into a management role. And then once I was in a management role, you know, I wasn't very good at it because I was young and stupid and, you know, they didn't really train you at all. And so I had no life experience to lean on. I had no training to lean on. I was just supposed to sort of make it work. And I didn't really know what I was doing. So I created the belief that I wasn't a good manager. You know, I was an exceptionally good salesperson and I believed that, but I wasn't a good evaluation of, I didn't believe that I had a good ability to, or an appropriate ability to evaluate talent. I didn't know how to coach or motivate people. I had just assumed because I was this way that if somebody got around me, that they would just be around me and they would, you know, follow what I was doing and get motivated because I was a motivated person. And it didn't end up shaking out like that. That's not how everybody operates. And I know that, you know, sort of everybody operates a little bit differently. But to go back to your question, the team formation was intentional over the course of the last year, because when I make the evaluation of, okay, I do want to pour into other agents and I do want to be able to share and motivate and inspire and have an impact on a greater audience, you can do that in the real estate space a couple of different ways. You can open up a brokerage like we talked about, which I was not interested in doing. You could also create a large team. And you see these across the United States where the teams are, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 agents on an individual team. The problem with that is that that operates very similarly to a brokerage where you have to have systems and processes procedures in place in order for the agents to be able to come and go, because they come and go on a large team like that.
Yep.
And so I wasn't really interested in that. But when I got exposed to EXP, I really found that, you know, this model made a lot of sense because it has a compounding the revenue share and creating a downline and an organization within an organization. This is basically, EXP is just a platform to process transactions. And I think that what it does is it allows you to create almost a mini brokerage within a brokerage, eliminating all the headache.
Okay.
Right. There was a lot of evolution, and a lot of this is due to sort of proximity to Aaron Novello, my coach and mentor, and him allowing me to him like painting a picture of who I could be, right? Giving me permission to change my beliefs and, you know, evaluate what I truly believed and what I didn't. And when I thought about what do I want life to look like and what do I want to do to have an impact, I also recognize that not managing and coaching on an individual basis and bringing and kind of working with individual team members on my specific team to help them grow without having ever accomplished that, I just felt like I would be at a disadvantage to help agents at mass, right? And so part of it was a desire that I still want to be involved in the real estate space in this town. I spent the past 18 years building what I have now. Mm-hmm. To have it finally operate where, you know, customer service is top notch and, you know, the experience of the clients and our interaction with the community and the town is just like, it's great. And I genuinely enjoy that. I mean, we're at the intersection of the busiest intersection in Mansfield. Mm-hmm. The community knows my name. And I think that there's a lot of value in bringing agents and having them be able to use what I've built to build their own thing and just continue to succeed. And so I felt like there was a big opportunity, but I didn't want it. I didn't want to go from selling 60, 70, 80 homes a year to selling 125 or 150. So, but I think that the potential is there. And I also think my ability to help coach and train individual agents on such an intense level on my team, I think that will benefit all of the other agents that just simply partner with us here at eXp. So it was intentional, but yes, very uncomfortable.
It requires a lot of you. I mean, we're all in here, a lot of us every day, like all the desks will be full and we all have different needs from you and we're interrupting you. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, we'll work on that.
I know. Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the change you've this past year from, you know, last year it was you and Sandy. And Kristen was on, but yep. she was more of like a transaction level just due to some other stuff.
Yep.
It was very much just you.
Yeah.
And then Sandy as your right-hand man.
Right.
Or woman. And now you have
And we had another buyer's agent at the time. And again, you know, perhaps it was too early in the process for me to take on a responsibility to train a brand new agent.
How are you feeling now, like thinking about 2020, we're at, you know, the end of 2024, thinking about 2025, like how are you feeling? Do you see it as being another year of just constant change or an uncomfortable, and are you ready for that?
It's weird because I'm really at peace right now. Like I felt like for the vast majority of my career and perhaps my life, I was very anxious and harrowed. Like I would sort of like, regardless of how well it was going, I'd feel like the bottom is about to drop out.
And you don't feel like that?
And
no.
I don't, because I don't, the bottom could drop out and that's okay. So that's the difference, is that the bottom can always drop out on anybody. Like, we don't know what's going to happen today or tomorrow, or, you know, with us personally or our family or our friends or business or whatever it might be. I think I'm just much more comfortable because the process of becoming the person that I am right now was much more important than the outcome of any particular decision that I've made.
The change from believing that you are not good at leading people to believing you could, and then actually doing it.
Yeah. And perhaps,
that was a long process.
Well, it's a confidence. I think it has to do with a confidence in yourself and an understanding of who you are and being authentic and not pretending to be somebody else. So for the vast majority of my life, I pretended to be somebody else. Not intentionally, like, I know I'm not this person, but I'm going to pretend to be. I just saw what I thought looked like success. I saw what I thought looked like body image that I thought was most appealing.
The cars, the house,
you know, everything. And now, again, through a lot of work and a lot of guidance through coaches and mentors and all that kind of stuff, I've really determined what what I believe to be true and what I want to do with my life. And so if the bottom drops out, then the bottom drops out. And if it doesn't and everything goes well, that's great. And everything in between is fine. And so I'm just a lot more, again, going back to your question, like I'm at peace with the direction that I'm heading. And if it works out, like if our relationship works out, outstanding, right? Mm-hmm. If it doesn't eventually, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. Like if you decide you want to go in a different direction, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Like the time that I'm going to spend with the people that I'm going to spend it with is going to be the time that I spend. I can't change that. The difficulty for me over the time in the past was that I would spend time, but I knew in my gut and in my heart, and I couldn't articulate it in thoughts or words. So that's where the battle between sort of your heart and your mind and your heart, your gut, and then against your mind. I knew it wasn't, like my body knew it was right or was wrong, but my head didn't. And my head kept going, well, you know, if you just make this amount of money, or if you just buy this house, or if you, you know, if you look this good with your shirt off, or if you do this or that or the other thing, then all of a sudden, you know, we'd be just like at peace and the world will make sense. And and I don't, just don't believe that anymore. I believe that I am going to constantly evolve and change into a more capable person that can have a bigger impact on other people, including myself.
That seems to be what you're seeking. And I think that when people unlock that, when people say, I'm not going for a goal, I'm actually just going to have the experience or learn, and I don't know where I'm headed, but I'm putting my foot forward.
Yep.
That's when the magic starts to happen, and where, like, whatever you want to call it, the universe, God, really starts to then step in, because then you aren't transaction-based, numbers-based, luxury-based, goal-driven. You're just looking for improvement, and then it's like it can sweep in. So I just see you constantly being comfortable being uncomfortable because you know you're on the right path.
Yeah.
And like being uncomfortable is the path and it's not the success.
The outcome is going to be what the outcome is going to be. But the actions and the person that I am and how I treat other people and the impact that I can have. And I butcher this parable all the time, but the, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, we look at the outcome of something as good or bad, but our perception of that particular outcome could have drastically different outcomes in the future. So something that, and again, this is why I butcher it every time, but the, but think about it. Like, so you go out and you find, you know, your car has a slashed tire and you're like, well, shit, somebody slashed my tire. That sucks. Oh my God, blah, blah, blah. If your tire wasn't slashed, you get in your car, you drive down the street and somebody T-bones you and you die. So yes, the wheel getting slashed, that outcome sucks, right? But perhaps that outcome saved your life, mm-hmm. right? And we just don't know in the moment that things are happening or that the outcome occurs. We don't know if they're good or if they're bad. There's been plenty of outcomes, like the compass thing. I say now, I probably wouldn't have made the same decision if I knew what I knew now. But if I got to go back and do things differently, I don't know that I'm the same person that I am right now. And so it's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. And so if I can say that to myself going back, I wouldn't change a thing. Then even in bad outcomes, they could all be for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I've sort of let go.
And the good outcomes, like the bad outcomes can be positive if you choose it. And the other side is when you always talk about how you made that goal that year in 2020 and it didn't feel, you didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. So you had that good outcome. You reached your goal of $1 million.
Yep.
In what's it called? Gross.
Yeah. Commission income. Yeah.
Commission income.
Yeah.
For those listening, I'm not an agent.
this is what's beautiful about this conversation.
So you met your goal and then you felt nothing.
Correct.
Is that what it seems to be? Like, that's when it switched. You're like, these metrics mean nothing. Like, meeting them, it's all about just your outlook.
Well, I think it switched. It switched when I got proximity to Aaron, and I was exposed to a different way of thinking. And, you know, my solution to making $1 million and not feeling anything, my solution was to leave the business and go way introverted. So I'm an introvert. So, you know, I always wanted to go up north and, you know, have a little cabin in the woods and not interact with people, because that's what I felt like. If this isn't working, if success and money and houses and cars and watches and all the rest of the shit, if that's not working, if that doesn't make me happy, then it's got to be the polar opposite. Because as in your mind, that's what your mind does. It goes, okay, well, if it's not one extreme, then it's got to be the other extreme.
Right.
It's never somewhere in the middle. Your gut and your heart kind of know, hey, listen, that's a bit imbalanced that way. That's a little imbalanced that way. It's probably somewhere in the middle. But if you just search for authentically who you are, you'll find where it is. I needed proximity to somebody that was able to articulate that and sort of point that out. And for me, that person was Aaron. And it goes back to the idea that you could be one relationship away from, you know, changing the entire trajectory of your life and your family tree. And again, I've been so fortunate to have a couple of those people in my life. Mm-hmm. And so for me now, it's all about how many people can I have that same impact on? And that's really what drives all of my decisions and my motivation at this point.
Motivation to just try new things. And you're not worried about it because you're going to have a positive outlook and hopefully a positive impact.
Yeah.
Just to wrap it up, we've got a couple more minutes left, but you talk a lot about your proximity to specific people. And I guess, like, I've heard you, we've talked about it before, but that would be your biggest piece of advice is for people out there struggling right now, especially agents, particularly, like, seeking out those people or trying to find that relationship and doing whatever they can to invest in themselves and get a coach, go to the leadership events and just be around successful, positive people. And when you find that person and you have to put yourself out there to find that person, like you had to go on that trip and you put yourself out there to do that, that is something you would advise people to do. And
this is the beauty of this sort of format. I mean, again, if you had told me 2 or 3 years ago that I was going to be doing podcasts and social media and hire a media manager full time, right? I would have told you were crazy. But I think that what I have realized the beauty of attention in social media is that if you're talking and documenting what you're doing on a routine and consistent basis, like if I'm putting out a conversation that I'm having with somebody once or twice a week for an hour or two, like I can't hide naturally who I am for very long, right? It's almost impossible. If you see somebody talk or post or tweet or whatever it might be multiple times a day, you know, at mass, you're going to understand who that person is. Mm-hmm. And you're either going to be attracted to them or not, or you might be indifferent about it. But I think for agents right now, you have to find that person. It's easier than ever because there's so much, and perhaps maybe it's as easy and as hard as it is ever because there's so much content out there, but you can consume content and you can sort of create a parasocial relationship with an individual. Like there are people that I follow online that I feel like I genuinely and earnestly know. Like I don't, like when I consume somebody's content to the extent where I trust them, like I feel like if I met them in person, that person would be the same person that I'm seeing online. And so you can create a trust with somebody. And then once you have that trust, then you can consume the information that they're giving, and assuming that they give good information, which if you enjoy the person that they are, it would be hard for somebody like that you connect with to give bad advice. But I mean, I suppose that's possible. But yeah, I think that that's the beauty of social media. And I think most agents just need to find the person that they connect with, because I'm not everybody's cup of tea, right? There's going to be people that just don't connect with the messaging that I send. Mm-hmm. I'm not in like an alpha salesperson coach, right? I'm not going to teach somebody to, you know, get in and grind every day and wake up and go out and hunt and kill the, you know, whatever and bring it back for everybody to feel like. I've had coaches that are like that, That's just naturally not who I am. It might be what other people need. And if that's the case, you know, I'm not saying that within our organization, we don't have people that can sort of guide you along that way, but you need to connect with somebody that, that you really sort of feel like you could learn from. And the moment that I, the first conversation I had with Aaron Novello, it was over Zoom, Google Chat or whatever it was back in the day. The first 30 minutes that I spoke with him, I knew immediately. Like, it wasn't a question. I was like, all right, I'd like to.
What was it?
For me, I remember very clearly that every coach that I've ever had, I don't know if it was that I was intimidated, but I didn't feel like I was the person. I felt like it was much more of like a coach and a mentor, or like a leader and a follower. And I felt like the conversation that I had with Aaron was just a conversation. He was genuinely interested in understanding who I was as a person, not in order to just get me to do what he thought I should do, but to really understand me and then curate and guide me in the direction that he felt was most in alignment with who I am, not in what he could teach or make. A lot of coaches try to replicate themselves. So, okay, I'm this way. This is what worked for me. And that's
what you thought worked.
Correct.
You thought if someone's just in proximity, then it's just copy paste.
Well, but it does work to create the same outcome. So like if you put almost any personality style in front of Mike Ferry and the goal is to make more money, Mike Ferry will get you to make more money. They will get you successful as a listing agent if you follow what they say. But that's not necessarily, that doesn't mean that, like, Aaron didn't evaluate whether I was able to follow direction to make more money or to go in the direction that he felt like I needed to go. He was evaluating and having a conversation to understand me better as a person. And once he understood and was able to understand who I was almost better than I could articulate or form in my brain, then he could help guide me to understand who I am. And it's not like a light switch sort of thing, but I just got that feeling that he knew me, or he would get to know me. And again, it goes back to the conversation we were having earlier where there was no hesitation. It's hard for me to make a conscious thought. Like I didn't like when I approached you about working together, right? It was a conversation that Sandy and I just sort of had, and it went from an idea to me asking you, like, within 3 days. I didn't have to justify it, like,
you
mentally.
You didn't go back and look at the numbers and, like...
I was like, this, you know, and I probably shouldn't say this, but it doesn't really matter the price. It's just, like, this needs to work because I believe that it's the right opportunity for... And I truly mean this. Like, it's the right opportunity for both of us. Mm-hmm. Like, the proximity to one another will help both of us grow. And regardless of how long it is or where we individually go, whether we stay working together for 25 years or whether it lasts 6 months or whatever it is, I feel like the time that we're spending right now is the most valuable use of both of our times to work with one another. And it's, again, I'm getting better at articulating that, like, forming the conscious thought in my head and being able to speak it into words. Historically, I've been very poor at that. Like, I can feel that it's the right thing. And when I do that and I don't let my brain overthink,
yes,
then I just make the right decisions and I continue to move along. I had suppressed a lot of my gut and my heart feelings for so long that just making those decisions based on that criteria now is sort of the thing. So back to Aaron, I just didn't have any hesitation. I didn't have to overthink it. It just was like, this feels like the right move.
One thing that I've noticed in the team of six, and I just kind of want to like close on this kind of, but it's...
Seven to include Nikki.
Seven! Yeah, I keep
can't forget Nikki. Nikki's our wonderful VA in the Philippines, and she's been with us for a couple of years. Unfortunately, we don't get to spend any physical time with her, but love her nonetheless. So, yes, you were saying.
I mean, I'd always go.
What, to the Philippines?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We could do it, yeah. What is it called?
You do... You- Yeah, you do love, oh, like a work retreat?
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah, we'll go on a work retreat. To
an offsite.
Nikki, no. Line that up, okay?
We're all the common denominator, and I think you've attracted this because you've been experiencing it, is you've changed to, I'm going to be uncomfortable and I'm going to be okay with that, mm-hmm. being uncomfortable and trying new things and putting myself out there, and nobody could show up and nobody might listen and nobody might care, but I'm going to keep going because I know it's true to me.
Yep.
All of us seem to have that same thing going on. Mm-hmm. Especially for me, every day I'm doing something for the first time and I'm constantly uncomfortable in this role.
So how do you feel? Like, are you...
I feel like I want to cry all the time. But no, but I felt this pull, like you said, the gut. I was like, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's so uncomfortable. And it's a lot of times it is really hard. But at the same time, it's easy because I get up and I want to do it again the next day. Figure out how to record a podcast or post something to YouTube.
I think that, and not to make this into a therapy session for you, but... Like, I think your biggest challenge is going to be to let go of the outcome, right? Like, we come in here, and I know that you want to put sort of, like, the best product forward, and you want to have everything figured out. But that's not where we are, and that's okay, too. Like, we also want to illustrate that not everything is put together. Like, we literally set this whole situation up like within the last couple of hours, and then it took us 2 hours to get the microphones to work. So it's,
I know,
but it's, again, that's where you're putting too much pressure on yourself to have and control the outcome. You ultimately are not in control of the outcome. These microphones could be broken. This desk could not work. The computer could stop work. Like, you don't have control over everything, but you want to have a specific outcome, and you have to let go of that because you are doing the work. It's not like you're sitting around expecting positive outcomes when you're not actually working. Mm-hmm. You're doing everything. Mm-hmm. So if you let go of having to have it be perfect, to have it have to be right, hopefully that'll let you sleep a little bit more.
I know. And the thing is, if I would just let it go of like the time limit, like I wanted to figure out now, I will eventually figure it out.
Yeah.
It's just whether I gave myself a heart attack doing it or not.
Well, what's interesting is that it has nothing to do with external pressure either. It's all internal pressure.
Oh, yeah. You. I've seen this team. We're all wanting to improve. Yep. None of us are comfortable or happy with where we are. And we just all want to be like, we're fine with being uncomfortable. We're fine. We say yes. We say, well, I'll try it. And You've definitely attracted that because you are doing that.
I just want good people around. Like, I just, and that's, so the common denominator amongst the people on this team is that they're just genuinely good people, right? They genuinely would do, like, any one of us would do anything for the other person. And it wouldn't matter if it was a personal thing or a professional or a favor or, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, when you attract that sort of group and you invite that to be the culture, then you end up attracting the right people.
Yeah, and a lot of us will say, like, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, but we can try. But, all right, so...
So are we going to look back on this and be embarrassed by the quality of the...
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. So
I think we should make a reminder in like 12 months, we'll look back on this at our first podcast, and we'll sit around, drink a cup of coffee, because neither of us drink a hell of a lot. But we'll sit around and watch this thing and just be embarrassed by ourselves.
You know, yeah, I foresee a lot more of being uncomfortable ahead of us.
Get used to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just talked about being uncomfortable for the past year, and we just got another year of it.
Yep.
So in 2025, December 2025, we will come back. We'll see... Where a podcast
we should record a podcast from whatever space we're doing that in at that point, because I guess I would bet that we're not going to be just shifting my table to the side to record our podcast
with your
with my map of Mansfield
behind it.
We had a beautiful graphic on the screen until we started recording, and then we forgot to put it back on.
Yep.
No, I think it'd be fun. Maybe we'll record a podcast while we watch this podcast, and we'll just comment.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that'll be fun.
Okay, so we'll speak again soon.
That'll wrap it up. Bye. Peace.
Bye, y'all.